This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solotropia, Solotropia, Solotropia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solotropia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found, but...
We started burning too many things we found. That's the wonderful Laura Williams singing there with the legendary Pete Seeger and David Burns, who wrote the words to that song, except for one, Solartopia, which I wrote. This is Harvey Sluggo, Wasserman, back for another Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Hour. Very, very happy to have you with us. And boy, do we have a ton to talk about. One thing we got to say, with the era of Trump, there is never a dull moment. We got Mimi Kennedy on with us today. Mimi, dear, you with us?
Yeah. Hi. How are you, Sluggo? Harvey. Happy New Year.
To be with you. Bridget, my wonderful Irish lass.
Yeah.
Steve Rosenfeld, have you joined us yet, Steve? And Bob Fitrakis. Bob, you with us yet?
Harvey, I'm here.
Hey, Bob.
Happy birthday.
How are you? Okay. Well, oh, thank you. Yes, I had my 73rd birthday on New Year's Eve. Every one of you listening to this show celebrated my birthday, but very few of you knew that you were celebrating my birthday. And Steve Rosenfeld, are you with us yet? If not, just shout out when you join us. I got to tell you, Bob and Mimi and all our wonderful listeners, that I had what I would have to term an out-of-body experience yesterday. I was on an exercise machine at a really good health club in New Jersey where I'm visiting my family, and I was watching the news, and Donald Trump said something that I actually agreed with. It was such a bizarre experience for me that, you know, I felt like an acid flashback, actually. It was what it was like. When he talked about pulling the troops out of Syria and Afghanistan. And I mean, this was mind-boggling to me. We would have never heard this from Hillary Clinton. We certainly didn't hear it from Barack Obama. And, you know, make no mistake about it, Donald Trump is the most loathsome creature that most of us have been exposed to in the last 40 or 50 years. But, you know, this guy apparently is serious. I don't know. Bob Fitrakis, you and I talked about this, and then we'll talk with Mimi. Is this actually happening, or am I still...
Well, yeah, he's thinking like a progressive Democrat instead of the neocons who held sway there for a period of time. So, yeah, shouldn't surprise Mimi, because the progressive Democrats have had those positions for a long period of time. Remember when Clinton went down, that whole neocon bubble burst. I mean, there's a variety of stuff. You know, if Trump, you know, wasn't so bizarre and a denier in terms of climate change, I mean, there was a lot. Should have been a lot of concern with what the Clinton administration did and later Obama did in places like Libya. At least Obama has been willing to come out and say it was his greatest failure. I mean, you remove the sovereign head of state, a brutal dictator in Libya, and now they have open slavery and a couple hundred militias, many of them jihadists running the joint.
I absolutely agree, Bob. Well, it's always been a conversation among friends I know. What if we had a dictator who wanted world peace running the American empire? Yeah, really, how would we feel about that? And I confess, there were times I wanted world peace so badly that I thought, all right, well, that's what we have to put up with for a little while. But I have since grown up and understood that there's no such thing as peace from above. peace has to come from below. You know, when the people of the world demand it, their world will have peace. And that's a slow, frustrating process of education and enlightenment, if you will, and learning to get along with people. Dennis Kucinich used to say, it's easy to talk about world peace. Try about having peace in your family. And he was right. So that's what I think about that. I want to get down into a detail. My husband read to me this morning at the table. He said, the man is crazy, meaning our president. He said, yeah, we have to get out of there because, you know, the sand. And I thought, yes, that seems crazy until you realize that sand in the gears of helicopters. I believe that at one point was blamed for what went wrong with Jimmy Carter's attempted hostage.
Oh, sure. Yeah, the hostage situation.
Yeah, so you know, sand gets it. So in other words, here's this idiot who knows nothing about working anything, but he gets that sand can get in military equipment, and that's bad. And let us just take that as a granular metaphor for the wrong ideas in trying to liberate anybody, backed by corruption and greed for money and oil, is always going to ruin your effort completely. So here's Trump going, I'm going to be a big man of peace and get us out of these countries. And yeah, part of me wants to go, well, yay. You know, you find, but on the other hand, look who he's got around him. And I mean, this is an attempt from the top to bring peace. If it saves one life of one person, especially an innocent person in Syria or Afghanistan, I will be glad. My husband went to Afghanistan with Medea Benjamin after the bombing post 9/11, and Medea was able to take a tour of educating people about Afghanistan and showing them little efforts on women's parts, other enlightened parts do stuff. And it's like visiting a state that has a completely broken economy, but various towns are going, we're going to try to make it here. We got some people we trust. So bombing that, war cannot bring anything good. And if Trump wants to get us out, yay. But of course, I worry that the right idea done wrongly only creates a backlash where we got 20 more years of militarists saying how honorable it is for us to be there and how good. And I do worry about that.
Well, I'm concerned with Trump may have it right in Syria. We should get out, but getting it wrong on a much bigger scale in Iran and alienating our allies in democracies in Europe.
Yes, exactly. Iran is a very big question to me. And, of course, what happens in Israel to that election, whether Netanyahu's form of bullying will prevail. You know, there's a lot up in the air. And in electing Trump, many people I don't agree with on the right, even hateful people, who just went, let's make it all chaos and then we'll get what we want because you're going to have to get your gun and that's it. But the chaos is, I hope, making people of conscience go, gosh, I have, not gosh, that's Rumsfeldian. God damn, I've got to do something with my principles, or this is, there won't be a voice of principle at all. I think the peace movement has a chance in 2019, and I'm grateful for it. And whatever part Donald Trump plays, by luck or by some glimmer of intent, I don't trust his good intentions precisely because of what Bob has brought up, Iran. But fine, you know, however that universe works it out with the forces of light and darkness, I really want to step forward on principle and talk about nonviolence and talk about global intersectionality, if you will, global cooperation wherever we can do it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's a great leap to hear this loathsome buffoon saying stuff that we've waited decades to hear. I mean, when is the last time the Americans pulled any troops out of anywhere? I guess Obama pulled some troops out of Iraq, but we're not totally out of Iraq. And
no, we're not.
You know,
but Obama gave a speech once and said, I remember it well, we cannot continue with perpetual war. He used the phrase perpetual war. That was at least an admission that that's what some people got us into and seemingly want to continue with.
Yeah, and here's a question. Given Trump's obvious antipathy, antipathy towards Europe, especially Germany, do you think he'll start pulling troops out of Europe? Why do we have, 20,000-30,000 troops in Europe, in Germany? How much does that cost us a year? You know, I'm just waiting to hear him say he dislikes Angela Merkel so much. Maybe something like that could happen.
Well, that would presume that he was pulling troops out of Europe in order to deflate any ideas of empire on the part of the American military. And if that were true, I'd sure like to hear someone articulate that.
Well, maybe he'll hire David Swanson as his Secretary of State.
Yeah, right.
God. Steve Rosenfeld, have you joined us yet?
Steve.
All right. Steve, not here. All right, good. Well, listen, let's hope he comes to us soon because we want to talk about election stuff. What I did want to do, we're going to peel the onion here, Mimi and Bob. That is the first order of business, the idea of Trump as an anti-imperialist. Again, I refer back to my days with LSD, and that's what it makes me feel like when I say that. But let's hope. I mean, stranger things have happened, right? Nixon went to China. Maybe Trump will go to, of course, you know, the military, our military, I'm sure believes that the real reason Trump is pulling out of Syria is just as payback to Putin, to turn Syria over to Putin and Assad. I mean, in geopolitical terms.
I think that's a big deal.
That would make sense. And of course, if he pulls out of Afghanistan and Putin is dumb enough to go in there, I mean, Bob, you know, of course, as a political scientist, the other term for Afghanistan, which is graveyard of empire.
Graveyard of empire.
And, you know, there's a list of like 13 countries that have invaded Afghanistan and collapsed, including Britain twice and Russia twice. Now, if Trump pulls out of Afghanistan, God, from my mouth to God's ear, I wonder if Putin will be dumb enough to go in there and for a third time.
Putin has a fairly predictable pattern, being in Georgia or with the Chechens. He goes in and sort of secures the place, but really isn't into the occupation like the United States has been with Afghanistan, where we come in and bring a whole new government. But the reality is, Putin had concerns. I hate to be real favorable to George Herbert Walker Bush because it's not because he passed on. But, Jim Baker said we weren't going to move an inch into the former Eastern Europe. And he really did not pursue that when he was president. But Bill Clinton and George W. Bush, went in and took the old Warsaw Pact and blew up, Yugoslavia over economic and ethnic rivalries, and ended up, moving troops into Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. I mean, the United States' foreign policy is blatantly imperialistic. And, so Putin's using elements of, the Russian mafia, as long as they're loyal to the, the Russian state. And I believe the key issue next year is whether or not the U.S. Congress is going to look into the fact what everyone writes about in, Business Insider and Forbes, that essentially we elected one of the leading money launderers for the Russian mafia president of the United States.
Exactly. Are we going to get at that? But Putin is closer. The one thing about the United States and what we're trying to do to secure the region in the Middle East, and I'm just reading a novel by my friend Henry Bermell, my late friend, who was the child of a CIA agent who was a station chief in the 50s in the Middle East. He has some very good things to say to us now. We have to establish supply chain, nearby allies who are ineradicable, so we also have to defend all of them, whenever we seek to establish a friendly government in an area that has been fought over by various empires. And in this case, I was remembering this morning Babrak Karmal, somebody who I remember because his name sounds like candy. And Babrak was the Soviet friendly guy, or he was a socialist. Anyway, I was trying to figure this all out. Was he a Baathist? Was he a socialist? But he's who the Russians were okay with. And then there was a lot of the Mujahideen and the warlords. In other words, it's a big country, very separated out, and empire coming in and imposing a police state of their own for a friendly government, which Russia tried to do and which we have tried to do. It's just not the way to make anything work without a sustained occupation, which means perpetual war, because there's going to be killing on all sides. And the way towards some sort of peace would be the same way it's going to be in this country, which is regional power centers have to get together, and the people who have only been exploiting them for wealth and to get their way with development, they're going to have to be humbled by the fact that we don't have the resources for that anymore, unless you're really going to kill a whole bunch of people and keep your resources for a few. And I don't think anybody can do that.
And I would argue that Zbigniew Brzezinski's book on the grand chessboard, written circa 1997, that essentially said Afghanistan was essential to the 21st century because of the oil and gas deposits in the former Soviet Union, and that really the old Unocal pipeline was one of the key reasons. You know, when the so-called U.S. officials met with the Taliban officials represented by the Pakistanis, widely reported in the Middle East and in European newspapers, the question that came up, you know, whether you wanted carpets of gold or carpets of bomb, was over the pipeline and the oil just north of Afghanistan. And I think that was really the U.S. motivation to get involved in that area.
Yes, I agree.
And I prefer the Chinese model with soft power.
Harvey, I wanted to ask you that, because your speculation that this could happen because of who this man is, he does have John Bolton rather in the way from the old Project for the New American Century. So what's your thinking on that?
I mean, well, Bolton's a traditional neoconservative who's going to favor the assertion of power. I mean, one of the key things we know from the neocons is they like to shock and awe democracy into existence. I've come to the conclusion that you can't bring democracies to countries with no tradition or culture of it through military means, through bombing them and occupying them. I think, again, the Chinese model of investment in infrastructure and trying to meet the people's needs makes more sense in the long run than either a Russian or U.S. model that involves the military.
And
those communists.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Harvey.
Yeah, no. It's okay. I do want to, but while we're on foreign policy, I do want to point out that, you know, the destruction of Gaddafi by Clinton and then Secretary of State and Obama is at the root, a major root of the immigration crisis in Europe, as he, Gaddafi, predicted himself. And I also want to say, in the presence of the two of you, that I believe the real reason, the number one reason that we took down Saddam Hussein and Gaddafi had to do with the petrodollar. That Gaddafi...
I agree with you, and so does John Perkins, Confession of an Economic Hitman.
Yep.
I'm sure John Bolton agrees, too. You know, that Gaddafi had an estimated 130 tons of gold and was about to launch an African currency based on that gold. And Saddam Hussein stupidly mentioned the idea of going over to the euro instead of the petrodollar. And, soon enough, they were both dead.
As you know, Harvey, I had the pleasure of sitting across from Gaddafi with Cynthia McKinney, and hearing him lecture on how he was going to bring the gold dinar as an African currency. And as he was saying it, all of it, which made perfect sense, that the people of Africa have to have their own currency like the euro, and there's oil and there's diamonds and there's, you know, rare metals and all of these other factors. At the time, I was thinking, you know, he's a dead man. They're not going to let that happen. Same thing with when you write Saddam switched to the euro. instead of the petrodollars. And I think it's one of the reasons, you know, we cut the deal with the Saudis and why the Saudis get away with one of the worst genocides in modern history in Yemen. And they get $125 billion in U.S. weapons. I think, you know, that happens to be the fact that they understand that they're going to sell their oil in petrodollars.
Yeah, well, that's the bottom line here. And, of course, I don't know if Trump understands any of that, but I'm sure the people around, some of the people around him, whoever they may be on that current day, might have a certain understanding of that. We're talking with Mimi Kennedy and Bob Fitrakis. We're going to run through the gamut here. Steve Rosenfeld, if you've joined us, chime in. We're happy to have you with us.
I got here, sorry.
If you have joined in. Oh, Steve, you are. Oh, good. Okay, glad to hear. Okay, we got a real good good crew here. The next on the agenda, and then we're going to get to election protection because there is legislation coming through. But I first want to talk, begin with how long we think Donald Trump is going to be with us and his legal situations. I have joined a pool of a number of people putting in $10 and guessing when Trump will leave office. I have estimated April 22nd, 2019, which is about 4 months away. I'm on the optimistic side, although someone jumped in and bet on April 1st. So, Bob, as the attorney on the phone, how would you run through the gamut here of Trump's legal problems and where you think they'll go?
Well, again, there's a variety of them. Actually, the New York Times today, really good in their magazine section that came out. But they broke them down into, you know, everything from government operations. I mean, where do you start? I mean, you know, how does an obscure, company win the rights to bring the electricity back up in Puerto Rico? I mean, the problem is deciding, did members at the Mar-a-Lago club decide on policy for the Veterans Affairs like a kitchen cabinet? You know, how have they politicized government? There's just so many areas to look at in terms of, you know, be it corruption, be it government policies. Small bank in Chicago that suddenly is authorizing millions of dollars of loans to Paul Manafort. I mean, where do you start? The biggest question is going to be where you start. And I say you start with the obvious. You start with the money laundering. You start with, you know, a Trump building in Baku, Azerbaijan, that never really opened. That looked like it was nothing other than a way to launder money for the Russian mafia. That's where there's been so many articles written for so long about Trump and the Russian mafia and money laundering. I say you start there.
Mimi Kennedy?
I agree. You start with the money. His self-evident moral and intellectual failings are all over the press, but I think we... Is anybody else hearing this constant interference that I'm getting?
It sounds like somebody's on somebody's dialing, or it's somebody's got a redial on.
I may, and it's a redial thing. So what I may try to do is call you back in on my cell phone. But just to say, start with that, because the gossipy, self-evident, outrageous failings of this man's character seem not to have ignited anything other than disgust, and who wants to live in disgust all the time, or outrage, same thing, difficult to live through, especially at a holiday season, and more defending by some of his defenders. So I wouldn't, I would go to the money and make it very obvious that this man is not above the law, and there are laws against this kind of robbery, just like a bank robber.
Steve Rosenfeld?
Well, you know, I agree with what all you guys are saying. I think that I think we will be lucky if he pulls a Lyndon Johnson and decides not to run for re-election because he has become so completely miserable. I don't see these guys, by him, these guys, I mean the Republicans in general, that are basically losing the demographic race towards a more diverse and less white monopolist America, ceding any ground without really fighting and using every tactic that's available. But I do think that the money, the personal money, is his biggest
is this
weakness.
Harvey's show?
I think the signs seem to suggest that that's where Mueller is headed. And let's just hope that that's right, because, you know, his entire career has been based on, you know, sort of mob-like criminality. I mean, the data points are endless, but somebody has to actually do the enforcement. And that's what the FBI, by the way, is good at. You know, they're not good at proving political collusion. They're good at these mob cases. They're good at, you know, at illegal financing, you know, money laundering, international, you know, all that stuff. So that's what I hope.
Well, I'm going to agree with your fellow Steve Rosenfeld, a guy named Steve Bannon, who was at least a year ago predicted that Trump's downfall would be money laundering. I mean, it's not that Trump's entire career has been involved in mob activity. His entire life, when he was 6 years old, he had your income, you know, from his father, who was a mobster, basically. His father was a developer in New York City. You know, aren't a developer in New York City without being, you know, beholden to the mob. According to David K. Johnson, Trump grew up in a household with the Gambino and Genovese families, two of the five families that ran the mob in New York City. You don't pour concrete in New York City without the mob. So, and we've had on the show David K. Johnson and Craig Unger, whose book, House of Putin, House of Trump, or vice versa, House of Trump, House of Putin, is just, hair-raising.
You know, Harvey, I'm not making any of this stuff up. it's Republicans who, okay, so there are Republicans who are writing, you know, on Facebook and other things, what their interpretation is of what Mueller is doing. And they go back to speeches that he gave when he was FBI director about how globalization and modern technology had changed the nature of organized crime. And that instead of being regional networks with clear structures, it's international and fluid. It's just like what we've heard. And so this is the kind of stuff that he's attuned to. And so let's just see what happens. Because, you know, all the money pouring in from Russia to his investments, going through Cyprus, his treasury secretary was the head of the biggest bank. I mean, it's just endless. So this is where I really think, you know, he's super vulnerable.
Right, and I think the guy that's going to do it, I think you're right about Mueller. And I have to say, you know, I have a friend who thinks Mueller is just a diversion and doesn't think he's going to close on Trump. But I think he's run a remarkable. If you can look at the number of indictments and convictions, if you're looking for a report, all you have to do is read the indictment. The indictments are the report. And I think the guy that's really going to nail him is Nadler. Because Nadler has a long history. You know, Jerry Nadler came to Ohio and was at the hearings we held in the city council chambers in Columbus after the theft of the 2004 election. And we met him, and there's no BS about this guy. And he has a long history of understanding the legalities involved with organized crime. Do you remember that, Bob?
No, absolutely, and you're right. I have supreme confidence in Representative Nadler.
I just hope
so
he doesn't wind up with it.
Jerry Nadler, this is Mimi. One time that I was briefing Congress very early in my PDA career on election protection, as we called it then, I handed out a glossary because they didn't even know terms like OptiScan or, DRE. And walking out, I warned that even on an OptiScan of a paper ballot, it is being done by software that can also be fixed, so the election can be stolen unless you count the paper. And Jerry Nadler, who had been there to his credit, walked out and he went, "Well, I knew those touchscreen machines were a problem, but I didn't know you could fuck with, pardon my French, a paper ballot." And I went, "Yes, sir, you can fuck with a paper ballot." And I loved him ever since because he's just wants to learn, and he does learn fast, and I just love it when I see him in the media, and I think he will take what the Mueller investigation does and make a very clear legal case for the fact that this president cannot be above the law, and he has broken many laws, and we can't have him be the leader of the country.
Well, let's get into, before, I do want to get into the election stuff, because there's important legislation in front of the Congress now, but let me give this a couple more minutes. Bob is our attorney. How do we envision, let's say that Nadler and some of the other people in the Congress, you know, Adam Schiff is really, since I mean, one of the great things about this stuff is that Trump has personally attacked so many of these people, including the Supreme, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, which apparently seems to have had an impact. I mean, we're going to start looking at John Roberts as being a swing voter now. I think we can thank Donald Trump's, you know, first person attacks on the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. But at any rate, how do we see it playing out? I mean, I think it's very clear, as many laws as Trump has broken, you know, his son-in-law, Kushner, has broken at least as many. I mean, it's a mob family, for God's sakes. How do we see all this stuff playing out legally that gets us to the end point of Donald Trump flinging the V sign from the helicopter as it leaves the White House lawn? I mean, Bob, where do you see?
Well, I think you start out with the simple and the obvious, right? If it's good enough to lock Hillary up for, you know, did any classified material pass through private email accounts used by White House employees, specifically, you know, Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump. Let's say, okay, you know, we're willing to concede to Mr. Trump this is of concern. Let's investigate Kushner and the president's daughter. You know, if you want to lock Hillary Clinton up for that, surely if they're playing fast and loose and throwing around classified material and possibly making, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars off it, let's take a look.
Steve Rosenfeld?
Well, you know, the danger with all this stuff is that, you know, we're in a moment that's exciting right now because there's a change. You know, the Democrats are going to try to show that they have, I don't know, you know, balanced heads on their shoulders and things like that. But and can do things with clarity. But the public, you know, the public's attention spans have become shorter and shorter, you know, in recent years. And what I'm saying about this is, you know, when I was a talk radio producer, I learned very quickly that outrage is not sustainable. You just can't keep hitting that. People are going to zone out. So I just wonder, you know, what is going to endure here. Or what's going to sink in, and it's because it's a long ways away to, you know, to 2020. You know, and you know what I'm saying about all this?
Yeah, I do.
You know,
Mimi? Go ahead, Steve.
I just think, like, how we, you know, we're excited now because, hey, you know, finally people are going to actually start, you know, pulling, you know, slamming the brakes on some of this craziness. There's so much systemic craziness. I mean, these institutions will survive, but they're really, you know, they're damaged. And, you know, what's it going to do to, like, you know, change the rules on, you know, coal emissions that don't accelerate, you know, climate change? What's it going to take, you know, on, like, rebuilding health insurance, you know, markets so that people don't face 15 and 20% annual? I mean, everywhere you look, things are screwed up by these guys because they, you know, they raise interest rates on student loans. Betsy, everywhere you look. So, you know, there's so much damage. And, you know, we only have such thin attention spans. So I don't know. I mean, I
guess, all right.
You know.
All right, good. Okay, Mimi?
Yeah, unfortunately, I can't hear Steve every time you go to him because of whatever the setup is. So Steve, I'm so sorry. I'll listen to this on the radio and online. But I think what's going to happen is when we get to the V on the helicopter, I think everybody will have been indicted. And I think President Trump as president will pardon his families for all the offense, his family members and friends for anything that is federally pardonable. And then he will
yes,
leave.
But there is.
Set up a lot of deals with media and books, you know, to try to recoup some of his losses if what I think we'll have found out by then is he will owe billions to people. And, of course, I always worry about everyone's physical health. You know, I remember when that guy was being slowly poisoned. Was it Yevtushenko? I may have his name wrong. But that awful skin condition that he got on his face and that gray look he got. So I'm always looking at good people and going, okay, I hope their complexion looks good. I think that we're at a time before the church committee did an investigation of the CIA. It was something that we practiced without, well, with enough shame to keep it covert, but, you know, assassinating people. And I think Trump, it's one of the things he admires about the Russians. They're still doing it. And but he's not going to get out of this, but he's going to try to use his presidential pardon power to relieve privileged people of the need to serve any time, and then they will try to parlay their notoriety into a comfortable, if diminished, standard of living. That's my guess, but I don't know.
So that's good. Thank you for the preview on that. I'm gonna put my money on the Attorney General of the state of New York, because you know, Trump can pardon federally, but he can't pardon on a state level. And a lot of these shenanigans, a lot of this money laundering did go on in Manhattan. And so I'm going to say that his entire family is going to, the two boys, Ivanka, Kushner, and himself, they'll all be indicted in New York. And he's going to flip out. And I have to say that's one thing that works against his leaving office early. I mean, I think some really powerful the most powerful people on this planet now, and it's not him, are going to want him out of there, because they want the stability is the thing they got their tax cut. They're getting all these environmental regulations, but sooner or later, they want somebody sane in the White House, and it ain't him. And, you know, just like they had enough of Nixon, I'm sure that when the stock market crashes and the housing market crashes, and student debt crashes, and medical debt crashes, and the ecology crash, they're going to want somebody in there, the people who really run the show, that can actually do something about it. It ain't going to be Donald Trump. And where the pardon runs out is in New York, and we'll see how that plays out. Okay,
so we got to the Supreme Court, though, wouldn't it? Go to the Supreme
What's
Court.
What's that?
Whether a state court can overrule a federal pardon ability.
No, I don't think there's any. Well, Bob, you're the lawyer. I don't think there's any indication that a federal pardon has any sway at all in the state courts. Am I right about that, Bob?
Right. I mean, if it's a state crime they're being prosecuted for, I mean, the president can't pardon. I mean, that's up to the governor of the state, usually with that power, and the president can't pardon. Right? He can pardon for federal offenses.
That'll be
well, we all know how tight Andrew Cuomo is with Donald Trump, so we'll see how that plays out. But then the question is, what happens? I mean, I guess an indictment in a state court against Donald Trump, they're not going to be able to arrest him, but they can certainly pick up Kushner and the two boys, right?
Right, and there's a question of whether the president can be tried after he leaves office. I think one of the places we should look at, investigate early on is what's Trump done in terms of looking after pardons, if he's already looked after them, particularly for his own family. I think the public has a right to know that.
Bob, he didn't pardon anybody. Isn't it Christmas that they're usually handed out? I thought every year, or is it just when he leaves office that the president pardons?
I'm having trouble hearing Mimi. What was the question?
When do the pardons work? I mean, if you can pardon somebody anytime, right? Doesn't have
right,
to.
Right, just like Ford, right? You recall that great Ford ceremony where he pardoned Nixon sort of in perpetuity. into the future, not only for any offense that he had was known, but for future offenses.
Yeah.
I think it is traditional. A president leaving office will pardon people. And then there's the pardoning of the turkey on Thanksgiving. So I think in this case, the turkey will be pardoned.
Christmas pardon. I remember trying to get one for Don Siegelman. I thought that there was a general holiday mercy that could be dispensed in the form of a pardon by a president. And if that's true, I don't know that it is, and I'll Google it when we get off. But it means that Donald Trump didn't use his pardon power this year, or we would have heard about it.
Not yet, anyway. All right, well, let's proceed now. We got some time left. I want to discuss the legislation that's coming up now that's relevant to election protection. And that, Mimi, I know you're having trouble hearing Steve, but Steve has a pretty detailed knowledge of what's going on here. Steve Rosenfeld, can you tell us what kind of legislation we're looking at in terms of election protection in the Congress now?
Okay, it's going to be released tomorrow, but I got an embargoed summary. It's called H.R. 1. They're calling it the For the People Act. And basically, it is a super bill of every progressive reform that has been introduced and then some in the past half dozen years in one bill. It's actually the most comprehensive election reform legislation, I would say, this century. And it's astounding. I mean, and what it is if you guys remember how we put together the What Happened in Ohio book, and it was a catalog of all the...
Which is like a how-to manual now.
Well, this is you can either look at this list, Bob. I wrote this piece. This is why I was 20 minutes late. You could look at it as a wish list of all the inclusive, transparent, and publicly accountable solutions, or you could look at it as dozens of focal points or a catalog where everything is broken down and needs to be rebuilt. So, I try to go through this and make a list of things. I mean, name an issue and it's in here. And I'm not kidding. So, you know, it has things like forcing every state to have online voter registration, to have automatic voter registration, to have same-day registration, to prevent sloppy data mining from purging voters, to stop using returned mail to purge voters, the whole caging thing, to limit who can challenge voters' credentials at polling places, to outlaw distributing deceptive information about, you know, the process. You know, it has restoring felon voting rights. And then, you know, it requires, it just goes endlessly. I can go on for 20 minutes, not 20 minutes, but 5 minutes here. You know, all states have to use paper ballots. They have to be counted by hand or optical scanners. All provisional ballots have to be counted. 15 consecutive days of early voting in federal elections. You know, early voting locations have to be near public transportation. You know, no restrictions on voting by mail. Colleges and universities are registration centers. The post office pays for mail-in ballots. Election day is a federal holiday. You know, money for, you know, modernizing voter registration systems. And then it has the campaign finance pieces that completely restore public financing and have disclosure and try to close all the loopholes where everybody plays the shell games. I mean, this is all the dark money stuff, you know, where people, I think, are cowardly, where they refuse to stand by the checks they write because they don't have enough guts to say in public what they're when they throw mud. And there's just endless stuff in here, you know, in terms of contractors have to disclose political spending. The IRS can create new rules for how nonprofits, you know, can give money in campaigns. The digital platforms have to create archives of all the ads. You know, anybody who gives money to any kind of super PAC or anything else that's more than $10,000 has to be named. And then it has the public financing thing where, you know, you give 200. Every dollar you give up to $200 will be matched 6-1 if you run for Congress or the presidency. You know, it says that you know they have Congress has the authority to revive the Voting Rights Act and to overturn Citizens United. And then it has the ethics stuff where they're going after all the executive branch craziness, including things like requiring Trump or the president to discloses tax returns and, you know, barring all kinds of acceptance of personal gifts. You know, it requires the inaugural committee to say how they spent their money, and right now $50 million is missing. It went somewhere into Trump land. So it goes on and on. And so I think this is, I mean, I just think it's an incredible compendium of, you can look at it two ways. This is what it takes to fix things, or wow, this is how broken down things are. But at least the list is out there.
Who, maybe Kennedy, did you hear what Steve said?
I really caught every 15th word, and you know.
Okay.
But
all
I
right,
remember,
so...
and I think Steve might have been on those calls. We had calls with. And now I forget who, but, you know, we've waited so long for this bill, 15 years longer,
yeah.
That everything good is in it because as the, you know, after 2016 happened, but as I would say, the education of the American public through the activism and then through the courts and the judicial process, Bob, Harvey, what you did, Steve, what you've done educating people. Now those who sat down to write this bill, the staffers, and the legislators, they said, do what the activists want. Do what will get us out of this shit. And that's what
that's amazing.
Bill represents. I myself was on one or two calls of legislators who wanted to know what we wanted in the bill with their staffers. And unfortunately, Steve, I couldn't hear you very much. I think you said something about provisional ballots, all provisional, no restrictions, something. And I wanted to go, are they going to be audited? Are they going to be part of the audit? I only remember the last big fights that I have had in trying to improve the system where I live and am able to have some impact. So I will, and that is what I used to feed into these calls, is my experience with where our weaknesses were and where our downright fraud holes were that were being exploited. So do you like it? I mean, does it sound positive to you guys, what I didn't hear?
Well, I think that, Bob, you can hear Mimi, yeah?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, I can, too.
Trouble with Steve, but I can hear Mimi.
Well, you are able to hear Mimi, Steve Rosenfeld?
Yeah,
so what I mean, I'm astounded, just to sum up here, Bob, Steve Rosenfeld is saying that this bill proposed to Congress essentially is a wish list for election protection.
Yeah.
And that I saw a piece online about it today somewhere, but I'm astounded to hear all the fantastic things that are in this bill. I want to share a quick story. You know, Bob and I, with Steve and others, broke most of the major stories from Ohio 2004. And, you know, basically we were laughed at and called conspiracy theorists. And so I recently wrote a piece for progressive.org, just laying out all the things that were wrong with our elections. And they rejected the piece by telling me that everybody knows this stuff already. You know,
oh, I
it's
know.
Like,
oh.
It's like,
well, are we
wow.
Sure, anti-fascist, I think.
What's that?
I keep remembering.
Anyway, so Bob Fitrakis, who wrote this bill? Do you know? I mean, who put it together?
I don't know. We've been, Steve knows. I mean,
yeah,
we've been through this a few times. I think the time is right now. There was always a variety of pushback, and I don't mean just by the Republicans, but even in a state like Ohio, right, up through 2016, I was suing Democratic counties and Republican counties that had good machines, you know, these advanced digital scanners, ESNS, but they wouldn't turn their audit systems on or their
right.
ballot imaging systems, nor would they, in lieu of that, you know, be able to do an audit after the fact. So I think and part of it was due to the, you know, Russian, so-called Russian meddling. But the key problem has always been these private, for-profit, corporate, you know, vote counting machines and voting machine, computerized voting machine makers that have always had the keys to the kingdom. So, you know, while I don't believe the, you know, the Russians were massively altering the elections, I do believe their involvement in the indictments allows us to address the problems we had with these private corporations in the U.S., many of them, you know, secretive, and of course, one absolutely corrupt, Diebold. I think now you're going to get the security features turned on if this is, in fact, a wish list, because Steve was there testifying in 04 before Congress. So was I in 05. And, you know, I went back at various times, including 2016. And there was a few people that wanted to do something. But I think we're at, it's the perfect storm right now. Everyone knows, as you pointed out, Harvey, that elections can be rigged.
Well,
is this bill going to pass? Is it going to go anywhere?
Well, Harvey, it looks like it'll get out of the House, but it looks like it will be dead on arrival in the Senate. And there we are again. I mean, let's just be real.
So it'll be dead. It'll pass in the House and be dead in the Senate. Wow.
Well, Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
When I was a public radio reporter in the 90s, I interviewed Mitch McConnell, and he said, I don't want any campaign finance regulations, none of that stuff. The only thing I want is disclosure. And now he doesn't even want that because, you know, the Republicans and the dark money thing were able to use it to their advantage. So, how is McConnell going to pass a bill that allows the $50 million that's missing from the Trump's inaugural fund to go to the president's desk for the president's signature?
You mean Mitch McConnell? You think Mitch McConnell pocketed personally the $50 million?
No, I think
missing
that's
from the Trump
somewhere
inauguration
Trump
fund.
Land. It's. I don't know where it is. I just know that Craig Holman from Public Citizen said $50 million is missing, and he wrote the provision. You asked who wrote it.
Yes. Who wrote Steve Roosevelt? Tell us, who wrote this incredible bill?
Different people wrote different sections going back several years. So Paul Sarbanes, the representative from Maryland, wrote the public financing section. You know, Craig Holman, the people at Public Citizen, wrote the disclose section. Then there's the Honest Ads Act, which, you know, was written by other people. You know, it's basically – and then you have the gerrymandering pieces, which are you had a handful of ballot initiatives that passed this fall. And the reason they passed was, they passed because people didn't want to see, you know, their electorate segregated by party. But they called for citizen commissions. And the reason they went that way is because the Supreme Court refused to deal with partisan gerrymandering. They only will deal with racial gerrymanders.
But, you know, Steve, Mimi wants to jump in.
Ron Wyden have a lot to do with it. Ron Wyden was doing a bill for the last 2 years that was pretty good. There were struggles, but Wyden was taking a lot, and Hank Johnson from Tennessee,
from Georgia.
Georgia. He was doing an amazing bill 4 years ago. These were going nowhere, but in dialogue with with PDA and people demanding action and Conyers. I mean, there were a lot of people that wanted to get it right that were talking to activists, and I think Wyden wrote a bill, and then the Secure Elections Act, that was the one that was getting a lot of talk about. Was that Claire? I don't know if it was. It was somebody who was not my favorite, not really a progressive. That
well, anyway, amazing. Listen, we are almost at the end, unfortunately, and the music's going to come on. I'm not going to say this, so I'm not going to be able to say Steve Roosevelt, Mimi Kennedy, and Bob Fitrakis, you guys, this is, we could talk about this for hours. This is a very big deal. Bill number one coming in with the new Congress to reform, even revolutionize, make somewhat democratic our system of elections. It's a huge deal, and I think all four of us really need to take some pride along with some others in terms of how far finally. 14 years after the theft of the 2000 election, 18 years after the theft of the 2000, 14 after 2004, at least we have a bill now that looks like people have finally taken this seriously. Thank the crew in New York. This has been an astounding hour. It's an astounding time. We'll see you guys next week. in Soarotopia. Thank you, Mimi. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Bob.
Was there an Eve, or did we evolve?